CliffCentral.com.
Very nice. Leon Bridges. Flax's suggestion, a song he reckons you might one day you might want to use at your wedding.
It's so beautiful. Like, it talks about like true love.
Yeah.
Like, she just might be my everything.
That's lovely.
Like, it's really a male opening up and letting like emotion in.
Someone says, is Leon Bridges related to Sunette and Bless Bridges? Those are two very interesting South African singers. Bless Bridges was a singer in the 1970s, I think.
My goodness.
He was famous for singing in Afrikaans and like giving old tannies roses during his performance. And Sunette, I think, is his daughter, and she's like some right winger. Anyway, that's interesting. No, clearly not related. Leon Bridges happens to be black.
Hey, you never know in this new age world we live in.
Yeah, you might just have beyond something.
True.
And then I got this very nice comment. Michael Flax is here with us this morning. And this is from Kala, who's a regular listener. Says, Flaxy, the boy hath becometh a man. The student has become the teacher. Your inquisitive nature is finally rewarding us all. Good to have you back for a bit.
Thanks, man.
That's very nice. And then something from Ben Karpinski, who's listening to us this morning. Flax is what Gugu could be one day if he actually tried to learn something.
I'm not saying.
Some contributions from Ben. And we were talking earlier about people who use catchphrases, people who have things that they say over and over again that may mean something to them, but often are annoying to people who hear them nonstop. And someone says, two things. First of all, Justice Malala, who hasn't been on the show for ages, always used to say, and so on and so forth. And Canthan Pillay, yes, who now does the Burning Platform, always says, let's be perfectly clear. So there's some interesting catchphrases.
But we all have like that.
Do you know what yours is?
Do
you know what yours is?
I have to really put some thought to it.
Well, Gugu identified yours straight
Yeah,
up.
I do talk about, I don't mean to be crass.
Yeah, you always put a proviso in front of everything you say.
I actually do.
Yeah,
even with...
You guard yourself against being misunderstood, and then you end up being misunderstood.
I do say things like, let me just be honest, let's be clear. Yeah.
And you know you don't need to say any of that shit.
I know, but it's just a... Like, it's a crutch.
Do you remember the apparently kid? That kid that was interviewed by the news and that, like, every second
annoying
word was apparently.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, I love that.
It's also on YouTube.
Anyway.
All right.
Let's get into some stories.
What's happening, Sia? You tell us.
Well, if you look at the calendar, the way things are going, Black Friday is about to pop up, folks.
Uh-oh.
So if you need...
When is it? This Friday?
No, it's next week Friday.
Shit.
So if you need to do any sort of shopping, just like get away and around it right now. And I guess like consumer credit agencies have to speak out as part of like just coming off as good people. But TransUnion is a consumer credit agency here in South Africa and is speaking out against Black Friday and saying, look, we've seen the rise of people getting themselves into debt because of Black Friday. Just looking at the numbers in 2018 alone, there was a 37% increase in people just opening new accounts.
Oh boy, please be careful. This is so bad.
And people who already had some sort of credit card or any accounts where they could loan some money, there was a 21% increase in total credit limits for those existing cards. So these are credit cards or clothing accounts or retail revolving accounts as well. Guys, this is a thing.
Yeah,
and we speak about it every single year, but somehow we all just get wrapped up in it every single year.
It's a massive marketing ploy. I mean, even the name, they tried to name it Red Friday because it would take companies out of the red zone because they'd start becoming quite profitable from sales. And that didn't even work. So no one really liked the name. It didn't flow. So then they kept with Black Friday. And there's a whole big story behind Black Friday. But it's a whole big marketing thing. You think you're saving, but the thing is, I don't feel that in South Africa we do Black Friday right. I think in America their discounts are a lot larger than here.
Yeah.
Here you save maybe like 20 rand, but you go purchase something, 20 rand, and you'll work yourself into debt for something you don't need.
Mm. Exactly. Well, I just want to put into context, Alibaba do this thing called Singles Day, which is kind of like Black Friday. They made 38 billion in one day, all right, in sales, because obviously people, like Flax was saying earlier, they conform. So if everybody thinks they're getting bargains on that day, they all shop. gives people who wouldn't normally have any reason to shop on that day, oh, I better go online and join the frenzy. So here's just to give you an idea. $38 billion in one day that Alibaba made, all right?
Mm.
That equals 560 billion rand in 24 hours. Now, ShopRite's annual sales are only 154 billion. That means that Alibaba in one day made five times, maybe even six times, what Alibaba made in one day. Sorry, ShopRite made in a year what Alibaba made six times in one day. Unbelievable. Spa, 101 billion. Pick and Pay, 90 billion. Massmart, 91 billion. That's macro. Woolies, 70 billion. Fashini, 37 billion. Clicks, 36 billion. Discim, 25 billion. Mr. Price, 23 billion. Truworths, 19 billion. If you put all of those together, that's 646 billion rand. All of those South African businesses together made just a little bit more than Alibaba made in one day with Singles Day.
And it's not even worth it, like, going to the shops and standing in this long queue, please, taking a day off work. At least with, like, so I read the book, A House That Jack Ma Built. It's a whole story with Alibaba. They're geniuses, not just with the Singles Day, but their logistics. So they will have, they've worked out that if they leave couriers on trains just going up and down, they could have guys passing parcels through fences to people that are stationary on the train, and they can get parcels to you a lot quicker.
They are
as genius.
Unreal.
Jack
a powerhouse.
Jack Ma is one of the nicest people, apparently, and he's an absolute genius.
Yeah, he is. He's smart as nail.
And he's probably failed more times than, like, majority of the billionaires out there. But he keeps on trying to break the boundaries.
Beautiful.
You're looking at more South African numbers. Just with 2018 alone, there was also a 30% increase in specifically retail revolving accounts. And this was predominantly used for people buying electronics, home goods, and general appliances. So I also have Massmart South Africa's details here. And I'm just only putting this all out there as a bit of a warning if you're about to go spending this year.
Yeah.
Massmart, they have the likes of Dion Wired, they have Game, they have Builders Warehouse, etc., etc. So Game stores last year increased by 24% in sales for Black Friday alone.
Yeah, you see.
Builders Warehouse sales increased by 33%. In the period, well, this is 2018 overall. Macro alone made its first 200 million South African rands within 15 hours on day one of this whole shopping day spree. Because, you know, there's Black Friday, then what is it, Cyber Monday, and then there'll always be something added on and on and on. But, yeah, in total, Massmart reported group sales of 1.8 billion rands over the three-day Black Friday period.
Unbelievable.
From Friday to Sunday, they made 1.8 billion rands last year alone.
See, they go and they start offering store credit, and I'm so against store credit because it sort of plays on the principle of a casino whereby they take money out of it and they give you chips. So you no longer start seeing money being traded.
Yeah.
So you don't have that, like, connection to it. You're just literally giving off pieces of plastic.
It's electronic, yeah.
So now with store credit, you literally don't see it while you're purchasing until you actually have to go pay it. And it's not right.
Oh, but they get you in such cunning ways. I saw a South African retailer who's now offering either free Uber rides or like a hugely discounted Uber ride if you're going to their store on Black Friday.
They're trying to add
you
more
know how
value.
Many people are going to get
such
into that.
Such a bad idea. That's don't do it.
That's where, like, this whole, like, theme of psychology comes in, and how psychology is going to run this world one day, because you seem like you're getting more value on this specific day, so you want to take full advantage of this extra value, but it's just a perception that you're getting extra value, not actually, because all you're getting is an Uber ride, which is now costing you more because it's an Uber ride to go spend money.
Yeah. And you're still paying, even if it's discounted. This is what people don't seem to understand. Discount doesn't mean you're going to save. It just means you're spending less.
Yeah, I was reading an article on this Black Friday thing, and I mean, they were just trying to show you that it's all bullshit. So they'll talk about a discount for, let's say, a TV, but they don't specify how many of those TVs. It could be five. and it's perfectly legal for them to only have five of those.
Or when you say while stocks last, yeah, you've covered your beehive.
Exactly. Yeah,
correct.
You know?
I'd love someone to monitor the TV throughout the year and see even a gradual increase of R1, which then falls onto Black Friday, and they've literally taken the TV back down to its original price without you even knowing.
Mm-hmm. I'd probably do that.
Mm. And they'll blame it on inflation or consumer price index.
Well, it's like, for example,
like
whenever the petrol price goes up, they never give us, like, they don't say, well, those food prices that went up because of petrol, we're going to bring down again when the petrol price comes down.
Why doesn't petrol get included in Black Friday? Black Friday, well, petrol's like 50 well, cents less.
Here's someone who says, I like to spend on liquor on Black Friday. Then I make it seem like I'm rich during the festive season.
Oh.
And Ali says, funnily enough, he's commenting on Alibaba, says it's a marketplace with a huge market base. Comparing them to Clicks and others might be a bit unfair.
Hmm.
And that's straight from Ali, so you must know. I mean, like Ali and Alibaba.
Look, if you are very rational around Black Friday, and I know a couple of people who do schedule their big purchases around Black Friday and these discounts, then good for you.
And remember, they call it Black Friday, as Flax pointed out. They used to call it Red Friday because it took you out of the red. They call it Black Friday because it puts you in the black, which means you're no longer in the red. But makes you as a consumer go into the red.
It's pure marketing at the end of the
day.
So
who's, if they named it after the company and not after you, who's making the saving?
And just going back to this Massmart report that I was looking over, like game stores in particular, there are 122 game stores in South Africa alone. 93 of those stores from Black Friday onwards and going into the festive trading season will now be opening at 6 a.m.
Wow.
And
oh, wow.
Some of them will be trading up until midnight even.
Those videos are crazy post-Black Friday. I mean, of guys like smashing down the doors at game just
horrible.
To get in, to save R200 on a TV.
I just always think, I hope I never see my mother there.
What's that? Like on TV? Embarrassing.
No, I know my mother's that sort of person. You know, she's all... My mother's such, like... a ridiculous spender. She once said to us growing up, "Don't you look at all of my Tupperware. This is what I'll leave you with one day." Like, sure. That's how she justifies her spending, because she has so much ridiculous things. Like, she has a whole... It's not even a Tupperware shelf. It's a Tupperware corner in the kitchen. It's ridiculous.
Do your mom and dad argue about that kind of thing, her spending?
My dad is smart enough not to argue with her about it, but instead manipulates her around it.
Even smarter.
Yeah, so like he knows, like, if he wants something, he can basically manipulate her around it. Like, you know, our staircase at home in Durban had one year around Christmas. We were like, what's going on? The construction workers coming in. My dad surprised my mom with construction workers to convert the space underneath the staircase for more storage for her. I was like, you sly. Dog.
Wow.
But it works for you. Anyway.
Here's someone who's talking about Black Friday, and they say that a family friend bought a creepy crawly one year because it was on a massive special. She didn't have a pool, though.
No.
For one day.
She bought it in anticipation of buying a house with a pool. When she emigrated years later, she didn't have the pool yet. Make smart choices, friends. That's just dumb, dumb, dumb.
That's true.
Last Black Friday, I saved 5,000 rand on a mobile phone, a Galaxy Note 8. Normal price was 15,000 rand, and I paid 9,999.
Huh.
Yeah, but you still spent money you didn't need to, Oki. That was dumb.
You didn't save.
Yeah.
You actually still spent.
Well, I mean, if he was already in the market for a phone,
maybe he did.
Yeah.
Save.
Well, here's someone who agrees with Flax about the savings and just how they're not big enough. I absolutely detest Black Friday. SA retailers don't understand it. In the US, you get 65 to 90% discounts. Here, people jump on the bandwagon for like 10%. Also, the poorer consumers who go and fight for Coca-Cola and toilet paper are actually really, really sad because they're desperate. And in this economy, people are taking advantage of them. That's a very good point. That's being made by Candace. And I needed a new phone, so that's why I spent the money on the new on the special on Black Friday. Yeah, I understand.
Oh, this is okay. Okay.
People literally have to take like days off work to go buy from one of the retailers.
Are you going to give people days off, yeah, Gareth?
For Black Friday?
For Black Friday?
Not a chance.
Forget it. Jane, forget it.
We do Cyber Monday here, right?
But I've
seen that happen a little.
It's like not massive savings.
We're like riding a wave we don't even understand.
No, I mean, a lot of it is just rubbish. It's really bad. It's not necessary at all. Okay, so stay away from that. That's a good warning. What else is going on?
Well, on the other side of the scale, big spenders who can actually afford to spend. I think this is a tacky TLC reality show waiting to happen. So, you know, the doomsday preppers are one thing, right? People who will, like, stockpile tons of food and whatnot. There is a growing trend now, and it's understandable, of super wealthy people who are becoming doomsday preppers as well.
Oh, yes. You know where they're buying property? New Zealand.
Why New Zealand?
Because it's furthest away from everything else. If shit does go down and there's a big war or there's some kind of...
They're safe.
No one's going to mess with New Zealand.
Yes.
And they...
Small population, relatively isolated, got good natural resources. New Zealand's the place to have your doomsday bunker.
These doomsday bunkers, so I like to watch doomsday preppers. They're insane. Some of these guys have like double-story doomsday bunkers with its own... like electricity that can go for like a year, water supply, canned goods. There's literally companies out there that prep your bunker and create your bunker to spec.
Well, here's one. It's called Vivos. And it makes sense, though. If you are a multimillionaire / billionaire and you are accustomed to a certain way of life, doesn't mean now you'll be just wanting to survive in an iron crate just because the end is nigh. So Vivos is a high-end, guys, this is crazy, a high-end doomsday bunker prepper that works with you to basically customize a mansion for you, like that is totally safe, or a mansion underground. This is insane. Vivos alone says they are so in demand that they have quite a lengthy waiting period for people who are wanting to work with them. They said just looking at their different numbers from 2016, they had a 700% increase in sales from 2016.
All right, if you
they
had...
attribute that to the U.S. presidential election alone, that people were so uncertain about what is going to happen, and there's a little anxiety going on. But since 2016 to right now, there was a 700% in their sales.
If you had billions of dollars, you eventually think, well, what am I going to do with this money? First thing is you want to make sure everybody's safe. You want to make sure that you can get away if there's any shit in the world. You want to make sure that you can look after your family. So you would spend whatever it took to make sure all of that happened. And for some people, it's like slightly obsessive. And they might find, you know, there's a couple of billion they could spend on making this amazing bunker. And then if shit does go down, they'll survive and the rest of us won't. Do you
but
see?
Dude, you'll survive for like 1 year and then what? Then you die.
No, not you'll take someone else's stuff.
But not when you're spending millions as well. I can go into some of the details of the specs of these multi-million-dollar bunkers. So there's one in particular. So what Vivos is doing is they've been going around the world as well looking at some decommissioned military bunkers.
Oh, wow.
So the space is already there and they just zhuzh it up as per whatever their clients want. So in the US and also like under the Soviet governments, there's some areas there where Vivos has taken that area and like they're now essentially like building community shelters as well. Just for millionaires. They can't disclose some of their clients, but they are include like hedge fund managers, there we go, sports stars and some tech execs. It's rumored that Bill Gates has a lot of these bunkers across the world, but as well.
No, I doubt it.
No one can confirm.
I know he's got like a house on like a lake where he goes and reads, but it's very open. If you were a zombie, you could easily get to him.
Michael, you don't know what's happening underground, though. That's a whole other party.
If you were a zombie.
You've done the assessment there, Flash.
Do you guys not see the correlation between Black Friday and Doomsday?
Exactly.
You're literally fighting for minimal objects.
I do. See, that's totally. I often have this, and I've spoken about it on the show before. There are people I have conversations with all the time about what we would do in a zombie apocalypse. Mm-hmm. Who'd be on my team? Where we would go? What we would get? Where we would set up a base? Everything. I often think about it. And when you see the people behaving like they do on Black Friday, it's like The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So even though these companies can't identify or name their clients, they can speak about what some of their clients have specifically requested. This list is a little crazy.
Let's hear some of these things.
Some of these clients have asked for a design that that can withstand a nuclear strike.
Right.
Others have asked with an equipped power system. Some have asked for water purification system. Some have even asked for what is called a nuclear biological chemical air filtration.
That makes sense.
So that whatever is going on outside.
Those are fairly basic requirements in the case of a nuclear holocaust. But what about the luxuries?
Fire pool. Anyone asked for that?
Well, people are still very practical. I think like the most... Not a fire pool.
That's a dumb thing to have. Everybody knows it.
Some have asked for a garden that, yes, we can grow things in, but others have asked for gardens for aesthetic reasons. Mm. And then this is now like the bad mamma jamma of them all. This is called the modern day Noah's Ark. This is something that Vivos also has commissioned. They have built this structure that offers 34 private residences. They each start at like 2,500 square feet. Mm. And this is now like a community in the structure that can also float or withstand floods.
You know what this is all about? This is like that movie 2012, where there's there're massive earthquakes all over the earth, and it results in huge tidal waves, and the only way you can survive is to be on these massive ships that can, you know, accommodate like a community of people, and they're totally insulated from any of that stuff.
With these 34 private residences, the clients there have requested things like screening rooms. They've requested private pools.
I like this.
They've requested gyms.
Yeah.
And Vivos is basically saying, well,
whatever you want, as long as you've got
like
the money.
Underground yachts, essentially.
Yeah, but if you've got the money, you just ask for it and they'll find a way to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. There's a complex that this company has also worked on. They don't want to name where it's located, but it's a complex that includes a tram system underground that can transport residents between their private units to amenities underground, like restaurants, theaters, coffee shops, a pool, and a games area as well. Guys, you know what? Anything is possible if you have the money.
Did you know there's companies out there, and they're very profitable. Their main job is to collect samples like soil or seed samples and create a seed bank for if ever things go extinct or this happens, they can just go to the seed bank and get a tomato seed and start growing tomatoes again.
There is one famous seed bank in Svalbard in Norway where they have a sample of as many of the important crops as humanity needs, and they're all stored there, and they do not allow humans in there at all.
Is it in the side of a mountain? I think I've seen a documentary on it.
Up in Norway. The very far reaches of Norway. All right, well, let's talk entrepreneurship. I know it's something that interests a lot of people. It certainly interests me. It may be one of the cool key words to being interesting and in business these days, but entrepreneurship isn't all fun and games. We are, however, celebrating Global Entrepreneurship Week this week in the world. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
No. Did you know that tomorrow is Social Enterprise Day?
Ah.
And social enterprises are businesses that not only make profit, but also do good work. Hmm. And we're going to speak to someone called Sarah Madingwana this morning. She's a young woman who's making huge strides in business, but she's also working to improve the lives of people and the environment around her. Look at it. Here she is. Here's the great Sarah Madingwana. Nice to see you this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, good to meet you. So tell me a little bit about you, and then we'll get into your business in a minute. Where are you from?
Okay, so Sarah Madingwana, I'm all the way from Davidson, which is a township situated in the east of Johannesburg.
I know where it is. That's good. Davidson, not well known as a place of great success. It's actually quite a hard, tough neighborhood.
a very tough neighborhood, but basically Davidson taught me very early that the world holds no place for self-pity. So I basically had to carry my family at a very young age, trying to juggle between going to school and finding jobs to feed my family, living with my father who is blind and my younger brother who has become my prime responsibility.
Wow. So my no, history... Sarah, how old do you know?
I'm 25.
25.
Yeah, I'm 25.
Yeah, you talk like someone who's got a lot of responsibilities. But where do you even start? I mean, those are responsibilities. You have bills to pay. You have things to worry about. But, you know, at 20 or whenever, where do you even begin?
I basically just decided to just be the change that I wanted to see in my own family and even in my community. So then I decided, you know what, I'm actually just going to embark on this entrepreneurship journey to sort of try and study part-time and try and make money on the side to be able to obviously make a living.
A lot of people go out and they try to get a job and work for somebody else because that's at least a safe way to... stabilize and to secure yourself for the future, and maybe you can earn a little bit, budget accordingly. Mm. But to be an entrepreneur is a lot more risky. You might make it, you might not. The cost of failure is high.
It's very high. It's very difficult to be an entrepreneur. There are challenges. I mean, so initially when we started as Davidson Book Club in 2015, right?
Yeah.
And then we sort of transitioned into Rudo Institute this year, 2019, because Davidson Book Club wasn't very sustainable.
What was Davidson Book Club?
So Davidson Book Club, we basically established libraries and book clubs in disadvantaged communities. We taught people how to read. We basically facilitated opportunities with people within our community. So we've also like planted about 120 fruit trees.
That's amazing, but this stuff is not always profitable. And you just said Davidson Book Club wasn't sustainable. Why?
So it wasn't sustainable because also it was an industry that I didn't know much about, which is why initiatives like the DICE program, DICE program, which is an initiative by the British Council, it's about developing inclusive creative economies, so they basically teach you about being sustainable, which is why we even had to transition, so you have to basically then develop a model where you have different revenue streams within your business, so that kind of information and that kind of knowledge really goes a long way, so that we're able to then grow our initiatives and be able to be impactful, scalable, and even still sustainable.
Now, social entrepreneurship is different from just straightforward entrepreneurship. Most people go into business to make money and to make a profit. If you're doing social enterprise, you're also trying to carry other people forward, you're trying to do good work, create sustainable projects, the stuff you're talking about now. The one is even more complicated than the other. It's hard enough to generate business, especially in an economy like ours, but it's even more of a struggle to do that for good and to make it a social enterprise. Is this because, as you say, you had responsibilities and you realized early on that there was no space for self-pity? You just felt this is what you needed to do? Or is it because this is developed as a result of you trying to find a way to make money?
So this basically developed because I didn't want someone younger than me to go through the same things that I went through. So even from the start, my intention was I need to basically work the ground so that people that come after me don't go through the same struggles. It was about facilitating opportunities, So part of the reason why we even started Rudo Institute was really because we were tired of having to take 3 taxis to get to college or university, being stuck in a metro rail train for 3 hours just to get to town to submit an application.
Yeah.
So we wanted to provide resources in our community so that people don't have to go through those struggles. So then we then converted our garage into a center, which is it provides a very supportive environment.
What kind of stuff do you have in there? I mean, what would people come there to do?
Okay, so we have Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So we have Wi-Fi. We have a library. It's also like a co-working space.
Do people have to pay to come in?
Yes, they do pay a minimum fee because
you've got to cover costs.
Exactly. Yeah, we need to cover costs. So we're also trying to introduce a coffee culture in the township. So we sell coffee.
Very cool.
Yes.
And of course, the more people that come, the lower those prices can go.
Exactly.
So now, what kind of numbers have you got?
The people that come through our center. So in terms of walk-ins, so far, so we only opened in August. Mm-hmm. So in terms of walk-ins, we've had about 300 walk-ins. And right now we're basically recruiting for a very big workshop in ideation for new venture creation for 300 young people in Davidson who will be able to then have an opportunity for this and get even an accredited certificate. So that event then will be happening on the 7th of December.
That's
so
amazing.
What we're busy with
that
right
now. That is phenomenal.
Thank
well
you.
Done to you.
Thank you so much.
And people can come and join in this community, and maybe they find reasons to collaborate in business. Maybe there's someone who's buying or someone who's selling, and they can have a conversation, connect to the internet, use resources.
Yes, definitely. Uh-huh. It's a very open space for anyone to come through and just be at home.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you train people also in basic word skills, help them make their CVs up.
Yes.
How do you know all this stuff?
Because I had to do it myself. Yeah, I had to do it myself. So, I mean, you'd even find that people in community, sometimes they don't even have smartphones. But because at some point I had an iPhone which had all these apps which made it easier to make CVs, you're able to then, like, help them out, you know. Some of them don't even have laptops. So when you have a laptop there, they can come through. You can teach them, like, basic skills in ICT and just keep it moving, essentially.
That's amazing. Yeah. Amazing. I mean, how many people
basic.
You must have helped along the way? And some of this stuff you obviously don't do for money, but you need to run your business. Is the ultimate plan to roll these out in other places?
Yes. So the big idea really is to have a state-of-the-art institute in Ekurhuleni, which is a technical, vocational, and higher education institute because of the alarming stats. So Ekurhuleni, we know that it's the fourth largest municipality in South Africa, you know, a population of over 3 million people, but only 38% of them have grade 12 and only 11% have higher education. So there's a huge problem, and we feel like we're trying to solve this problem.
What is the design parliament?
So the design parliament, because I'm also an artist, I love to paint. I'm a creative at heart. So I started it immediately after high school. After getting, I also got a distinction in visual arts. So I was like, let's try this out. Let's see where it takes me. And then I was also able to then showcase at the Nairobi Fashion Week with that. But I sort of fell out of love with fashion because it was just like a lot of hard work and like little returns. So I was like, you know what, let's just put this on hold. But I still love my painting and my art, so I still do that. I do paint.
And you've been featured in Forbes magazine. That's quite cool.
Yes, that's quite cool.
Has that resulted in any business?
Yes, you know, you get people who just call up and be like, hey, how can we collaborate? How can we assist? How can we donate books? You know, how can we help you grow? So being on platforms like that really helps, because it even gives you some kind of credibility, so that when you do apply for programs and stuff, they see that this person has actually been vetted. This person sort of like knows what they're trying to do, you know. So it does go a long way.
I think it's incredible that you also, besides running all of these businesses, you also are a freelance consultant in PR and project management.
Yes.
You are busy. When do you sleep? Flax is telling us he gets 8 hours of sleep now.
Very
and good. He's trying really hard to stick to that.
So it's project based, so it doesn't happen like all the time throughout the whole year. So I've been fortunate to also partner up with organizations like Share Your Story Africa, which is run by Mbumino Biva, who is actually Oprah Winfrey's mentee. So we actually launched Unite Against Domestic Violence and HIV and AIDS in South Africa in 2017. So I did the launch event. That was pretty exciting. It was very intentional, and it's sort of like, was one of my highlights.
Well, I'm sure that your family are really proud of you. This is phenomenal.
I hope they are. Sometimes they don't understand what I'm trying to do, and they just force me to try and find a job, but it's just like,
Sarah, I think your attitude right from the get-go is exactly the attitude that makes most people who want to work for themselves and start businesses.
Thank you.
What it takes, that's the chief ingredient. You said right at the beginning of this conversation, and I'm sure you said it at some point in your life to yourself, that there's no space for self-pity. Those were your exact words. There's no space for people who want to feel like victims and feel sorry for themselves. Nobody cares. You've got to figure it out. You didn't ask for your dad to be blind.
Mm-mm.
You didn't ask to support other people in your family. This is not exactly the fairest situation. There are people who don't have those responsibilities and who never do as well as you did. But you decided, this is what I've got to make it work.
I have to make it work, you know. I have to just take it as it comes. Honestly, what else can we do?
So what's your advice to anybody who's struggling to get a job right now? They're feeling sorry for themselves. They think there's no future for them. They're blaming the government, the country, the economy,
the taxis, crime.
They're worrying about their neighbors. They're jealous of other people. What do you say to those people?
I think it's very important for people to just get up and start really doing things deliberately, consciously, and purposefully. Like, people just need to get up and just go. You know, this thing of having to complain and not being part of the solution is really a problem. So, people just need to get out there and be their own heroes, you know. No one's going to save anyone. Really.
Sure. Do people sometimes say to you that they think that's harsh and you're being unkind?
Yeah, I guess. But it's the truth. Honestly, it's the truth.
And there's nothing better than the truth, because in the end, that's all you've got, right?
Exactly.
Wow. It's amazing that you have this clear picture in your head at 25. I can only forecast success for you as if you haven't already had it. But this is why you get featured in Forbes magazine, because you see it clearly. Are you worried about your businesses every day? Do you think about them all the time? Is it an eat, sleep, breathe, live kind of world for you, that you just love being in the businesses you're in?
Yeah, I definitely love what I do. Like, I would go to sleep at 12, wake up at 4. I really love it. I love interacting with people. I love, I think the one thing I enjoy the most is business acquisition, having to speak to possible stakeholders, partners, and just to explain the vision properly to them. So I really enjoy those kinds of spaces. I talk about my business everywhere I go. You can't not know about it. No.
You never ever get tired of talking about your business.
I don't get tired.
No, for sure, right?
I don't get tired talking about
it. Wow, this is phenomenal. Are you excited about the prospects of where these businesses can go, and what's your next level plan for all the businesses you've started, but especially the ones that you're most interested in right now?
I am excited for the future. I know it's going to work out. It has to work out. Like, there's no other way. Yeah. So, like I said, we basically want to build a state-of-the-art institute in Ekurhuleni. So we're basically trying to find land where we can build from. We already have an architect who is basically speaking on behalf of the IDC for us, and he'll be doing the design for us for the actual institute. So, we're trying to collaborate with other stakeholders. We've got like YGAP who's supporting us. We've got DICE supporting us. We've got quite a number of institutes behind us.
Some people would say that it is impossible to start something if you don't have money. What do you say to those people? Because you did. You started something without money.
No, you don't always need money. You just need to leverage relationships. You know, speak to a friend. What do they have that they can offer you that then you can also help them? You don't always need money. I don't believe in that.
Wow. There's a famous quote that goes, you don't need money, you need a new strategy.
Yes, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's excellent. Mm. Well, congratulations to you. This is a terrific story. Sarah Madingwana, you can find out more about her if you go and read that Forbes Africa article, but there are also probably a couple other things. Are you on social media?
Yes, I'm on social media. It's Sarah Madingwana, and then the initiative is Rudo Institute, and then
is that RUDO?
RUDO Institute, and my business partner is Ukwandile Sikosana.
Very good.
Yes.
Well, congrats, and thanks for spending time with us. Did you know that it's Global Entrepreneurship Week?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
Just quickly, before you go, the British Council you mentioned earlier on, who are they and what kind of work do they do?
Okay, so the program that I was part of, they basically help us, like, as social entrepreneurs to grow our initiatives. So then they started that whole DICE program, that they initiated. So we would attend like twice a month, I think for 4 months, where we'd just like be intense learning.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that's available for a lot of people, because they are you know, the South African, they're present in South Africa, and they're involved with lots of entrepreneurs and lots of businesses.
Yes.
Interesting stuff, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I hope we'll see you again soon. Come and update us as things develop, and especially with this institute that you're building.
For sure. Thank you so much for having me.
Congrats. Very good. There he goes. Sarah Madingwana. Cliffcentral.com, it's about 10 minutes to 8. Flax, good to have you here this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a whole lot of stuff to share with us. And a few messages before we go. If I could, I would download the whole Pornhub database. When the planet eventually becomes populated again, I could make millions off non-mutant porn. That's an interesting survival strategy.
Oh, non-mutant porn. Yeah. That's a brilliant business strategy over there.
That's from Jay. Jay is going to be very rich one day, but not anytime soon. Very bizarre route to entrepreneurship for Jay.
For Jay, yeah.
Tough market to enter, because a few people will start creating their own sort of porn. You won't be the only one surviving in the doomsday bunker. Yeah, so you'd have tough competition. You'd really have to get to market quickly. Build infrastructure.
Dr. Robin says, if I could get another pair of Cliff Central earphones on Black Friday, I would. Mine are looking a bit worse for wear with tape holding them together. I'm sorry, Robin, but we don't have any more. Oh. Otherwise, I'd help you out there. I agree with Candace. Our retailers think that 20% off is a Black Friday special. That is trash. That's also what Flax said earlier on. So lots of different messages coming in about that. All right. There's what, 5 minutes left? Anybody want to throw anything else
out? Oh, we have to talk about this, because it's just a gift that keeps on giving in terms of a story. But there's another Jeffrey Epstein update.
Oh, wow. What's the update?
Yesterday, two of the prison guards that were working at the prison he was kept at were charged by a grand jury, and they were charged for conspiracy and also filing false records in connections with their actions on the night Jeffrey Epstein died. Dum, dum, dum.
Wow. Yeah.
So the two guards are Tova Noel, he's 31 years old, and Michael Thomas is 41 years old. They were taken into custody on Tuesday morning, and they pleaded not guilty. They were released on bail of around $100,000 for each person. But now the charges come more than 3 months after Epstein was found dead at the Metropolitan Correctional Center.
What is like a 10-second summary of this Epstein story? I don't know anything about it.
He's a freak.
Yeah, this is not an easy
one. We don't even say allegedly anymore.
No, he's a convicted child sex trafficker, effectively, and he killed himself in prison, according to authorities. Of course, that's very suspicious, because he was friends with loads of important people, including Bill Clinton and Prince Andrew and a lot of other celebrities. And he owned the sex island, where they would take these young girls, and these young girls would be essentially turned into adolescent prostitutes. Very upsetting. It. Yeah. Gross story.
This is now, yesterday we were also able to get more details on what these two guards were supposedly doing on the night of Epstein's death.
What did they say?
So the guards repeatedly failed to complete the required counts of prisoners on their watch in the specialized unit. According to the indictment, they sat at their desks, they were browsing the internet, specifically for furniture sales and sport news, who knows. And then they also moved around the common area. They were meant to, instead though, be taking counts of the prisoners, making sure like everyone is okay, every 30 minutes.
And he was on suicide watch. This is what makes it even more suspicious.
And he still kills himself, apparently.
For a period of approximately 2 hours, both these gentlemen sat at their desks without moving as well. According to the indictment, this might allude to the fact that they were asleep. And to mask the fact that they had allegedly neglected to complete the checks, the two signed false certifications saying that they had actually performed their duties. So the night Epstein died, no officer completed any count or round in the unit between 10:30 p.m. and 6:30 a.m.
So they're not saying the officers killed him. They're saying their negligence is the reason he was able to kill himself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's so suspicious. The whole thing is just extremely suspect. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Surely there's cameras throughout the entire prison that catches everything.
Oh, well.
You would think so.
Attorneys who...
those cameras suspiciously went off exactly during the time that he killed himself.
Did they go off?
No, we don't know.
They go, they went off. There's no footage. They mysteriously switched off. Don't tell me this is all by chance. I know there are people who think, oh, you know, sometimes it's coincidental. Well, this is very convenient for a lot of people who are in trouble if Epstein ended up testifying.
Yeah, it sounds like the kind of guy you want to keep quiet and make disappear.
That's exactly
what happened.
They did. very, very bizarre.
This is weird.
Sounds like the set of a movie or something.
It's a complete movie plot, this. Bizarre.
The attorneys who represent Jeffrey have not commented on this yet, and also Hillary Clinton has yet to comment.
Well.
You are joking. I love you, HRC.
You do? Careful.
Well, no, I need to say that so that she doesn't kill me.
Yeah, if you don't, please, nobody say anything bad about Hillary Clinton.
I'm not going to mention
on
her
this
name
show.
Anymore.
We don't want to do.
What's her middle name? The R.
Rodham.
Rodden.
Rodham. That's her. Rodham. Rodham Clinton. That's her surname. Before she married Bill, it was Hillary Rodham.
I feel like that's quite a fabulous name.
Rodham.
You know what? Anyway. Keep saying nice things about Hillary, or we'll all be dead.
Yes. And then just lastly on the whole Jeffrey thing, Prince Andrew also isn't having the greatest of times. A lot of his supporters and his sponsors are dropping him left, right, and center. He had an event over the weekend. It's like a networking event, and tons of his sponsors fell out there. They were like, nope, this is it. Not going to be associated with this anymore. Specifically, KPMG was one of the major supporters, and they decided not to renew sponsorship.
That's a brave move.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we don't know for sure what's going on, but it's interesting, like... Prince Andrew, I just want to play you this quickly.
Sorry, I'm counting the number of sponsors who have stopped supporting Prince Andrew. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 sponsors dropped as soon as...
That's a lot of money.
...this Jeffrey Epstein saga was involving Prince Andrew.
Well, Prince Andrew, in that interview that we were talking about, he said some very strange things about that photograph of him with Virginia Roberts, who was at that stage, I think, 14, where he looks like he's holding her. And Sia mentioned this yesterday, but it's worth actually hearing it in Prince Andrew's words.
That's weird.
You tell me if you think this guy's lying, all right?
I provided a photo of the two of you together.
Yes.
Your arm was around her waist.
Yes.
You've seen the photo.
I've seen the photograph.
How do you explain that?
I can't. Because I have absolutely no memory of that photograph ever being taken.
Do you recognise yourself in the photo?
Yeah, it's pretty difficult not to recognise yourself.
Your friend suggested that the photo is fake.
I think it's, from the investigations that we've done, you can't prove whether or not that photograph is faked or not, because it is a photograph of a photograph of a photograph. So it's very difficult to be able to prove it, but I don't remember that photograph ever being taken.
But it's possible that it was you with your arm around.
That's me, but whether that's my hand or whether that's the position, I have simply no recollection of a photograph ever being taken.
And what do you think of that?
I genuinely had a shiver.
I
run down my
remember, he's so. Basically saying, sure, what a mess.
So which also means, his memory is such a blur because he hangs out, in any case, with a lot of, teenage girls.
But he said, as a member of the royal family, I'm not very touchy-feely and I don't like public displays of affection. So it's unlikely I would put my arm around a girl like that.
What is his tie? Who is...
Prince Andrew is the Queen's son, second son. The Queen of England's second son.
Oh, okay.
So he's kind of up there. And now he is in the middle of this ugly controversy.
Well, he's up there, he's down there, he's in between. side.
Yeah.
How many children?
And he was very good friends with this Jeffrey Epstein. He's got two children. Are you going to ask how many children the Queen has?
Yeah.
Four.
Oh, yeah.
Three sons and one daughter. And he's the second one.
Yeah, I should have kept quiet.
Right, just to go back to Gareth, on those phrases.
Yes, catchphrases. Yeah. Who've we got?
I've still got Sia, because he's like the master of this. Mm. Crunching the figures. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. I do use that
crunching
a lot.
Crunching the figures. The gift that keeps on giving.
Yes.
No, I use that very rarely.
You do.
According to... here's another message. This one is from Sandile. Sandile says, Sia often says, every Tom, Dick and Jabulani.
In South Africa, our land, that's being politically correct.
No, but it's a thing you use.
Yes,
a lot,
okay, yeah? Sure, sure. Okay.
Alluded to the fact.
Because he actually made a note of these.
Is that me?
It's all Sia.
Okay, carry on.
Yeah.
It's all Sia.
Yeah, those are the ones.
Sounds like you've got an axe to grind here, Google. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a writer, Gareth, so I really pick up on
okay, what
things.
Else?
Yeah, those are the three that I've got for now.
Wow. There we go. We'll continue this saga tomorrow.
All right, well, thank you so much to all of the Tom, Dick, and Jabulanis. I think we were alluding to the fact that we had to go off and in the show and crunch the numbers.
Exactly.
There you go.
Flax, good to have you here, dude.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, very cool. Sounds like you've got lots of exciting things to tell us when you do come in, so it's good to have you around, and you're always welcome. And you can always be a part of the show. You are, if you're listening. You can always listen to things that you might have missed by going to cliffcentral.com. And remember to email us if you've got something you want to throw in there too. Gareth@cliffcentral.com. Have a happy Wednesday.
CliffCentral.com.